Hi, this is Jackie Wicks with Peer Trainer, and I'm so excited because there's a woman, her name's JJ Virgin, and she had been brought to my attention in so many different things. So many people kept talking about her, and then I saw that she was doing some TV show, and I saw all these different things, and I said, I have to track her down. So I did. Again, her name's JJ Virgin. She's a celebrity nutrition fitness expert. And I have her here today because what happened was we were, you know, I don't like any of this. Hold on a second. Hi, this is Jackie Wicks with Peer Trainer. And I want to introduce you to someone today. Her name is JJ Virgin. She's a celebrity nutritionist and fitness expert. And I want to tell you why we tracked her down and why we're on the phone today, because we're going to be discussing a lot of great things. So many people kept bringing her up to me, and everyone knows I've talked to so many different nutritionists and physicians and fitness trainers over the years. But what happens is that really great people end up, you know, it's almost like the cream rises to the top. And she just kept coming up. And then what was so interesting is someone said, oh, yeah, I think she's doing that new TV show. And it turned out she is. It's this show on TLC called Freaky Eaters. And so excited to track her down. And she's here today, and we're going to talk about the most common things that people think are true, right, the things that are going to work when you're on a diet or fitness track, but are complete myths. Let me just tell you quickly about her. She counsels and she speaks at so many of the medical conferences throughout the country. She was actually the nutritionist on Dr. Phil for a couple years. And again, you know, she works with celebrities. She works with Jean Triplehorn, Tracy Toms. And, you know, not only is she counseling the celebrities, she's the author of 6 Weeks to Sleeveless and 6 Weeks to Sleeveless and Sexy. The thing that I like the most about JJ is that she actually talks in a way that we can understand. She's not talking in this nutritionist English that I usually call it. She speaks in a way that you can actually get it. So, JJ, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to have you here because I have to say for our audience, we started talking and we couldn't stop talking. We kept talking about
disband. Break it up.
But the funny thing is we kept talking about the questions that come up and what people actually have heard and things that haven't even been explained well. You know, people are always asking, what do I do? But they're having so much trouble understanding why they actually do it. And they want the truth. You know, here's what I've seen, and JJ, I'm sure you've seen this. The confusion leads to inaction. And that's
sure.
The worst.
Yeah, we say a confused mind says no. And, you know, if you don't really understand why you're doing something and really believe it can help you, you're not going to do it. I mean, come on, why would you, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's how I am. And the thing is that if somebody doesn't even say it in a practical way of why I should do it, it's one thing for somebody to say, well, this is going to happen to your lipids. I don't really know what my lipids are.
Yeah,
but you know what,
like,
I do know But, you know, I do know what my energy is, and that's what I like so much about the way you explain things. You're talking in terms of what I can relate through during my day.
Good. Well, it is, you know, I know going around doing this forever, 30 years, that the key things that are issues for us, and especially, you know, us women who, I always say we work outside the house and we come home to our second job at the house, and most of us have kids. And then we have a husband, which is another kid. So, and then you have your pet.
Exactly.
I mean, so much stuff going on that we're juggling. And the biggest things I hear, I mean, we don't even make it onto the list, you know. So everything else comes first. So we're aging faster. We're tired. We've got carrying around extra weight. We're craving food because we aren't doing things to take care of ourselves. So at night it's like, okay, I need something, right?
Yeah, the wheels are coming off, exactly. And
yeah.
The other thing is, and what we were talking about earlier, where people say, I'm doing everything right. Why am I not making any progress?
Oh, and that breaks my heart. And that's really what I know we're going to deal with today because, honestly, the last really 15 years I've been working in the world of overcoming weight loss resistance. I speak at a lot of the major medical conferences, the integrative ones, all over about this topic, and it is such a big deal. And just really, I find it so upsetting what is going on with the obesity epidemic in our country, because there's so much prejudice against people who are struggling with their weight. And let's face it, it's somewhere around 75% of the population now struggling with their weight, is obese or overweight, but that other 25%, half of them are thin outside, fat inside. So we've got, you know, we've got most people struggling with their weight and following misinformation that will just, if not, if it won't help them, if anything, it is hurting them. So I really want to break through some of that today, because I'm on a mission to get the right info out and save us all.
You know, I want to ask you something about something you just said. You just said thin on the outside, thin on the outside, fat on the inside. Yeah, can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, this is really interesting. There was a doctor out in London. There's some really incredible. Now we're going to get off on a tangent, but I can't help it.
Okay. Yeah, just one second before
London,
we dive into this.
Yeah, was doing MRIs, and he started to notice that people coming in that looked like they were really, like, you know, they were the right body mass index, they looked great, you know, they looked great in their clothes, and then it was like it all came out. He would MRI them, and they actually had higher body fat, and he found out that about 50% of the people who were not overweight had this TOFI, thin outside, fat inside, and the key differentiator with those people is they were people who were trying to maintain their weight by diet alone. Because you hear out there that the best way to maintain your weight, the best way to lose weight is really diet's key, mm-hmm. but in order to have a healthy body composition and be healthy for the long run and look good with your clothes off, you've got to have the exercise portion too, the right exercise.
Yeah, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I want to dig right in because one thing that kept coming up were all the myths that we hear over and over. And we hear them in Peer Trainer, and you know, we even hear among our friends. You're sitting out to lunch, you say, oh, why are you eating that? That's going to do X, you know. So there's all these common things. So I just want to start the first one, and you hear this over and over. It's a big source of confusion for people. Eating every 2 to 3 hours is the only way that you're going to get some energy and you're going to actually be able to get to the weight that you want to get to.
Well, if you're using eating every 2 to 3 hours to get energy, I know that you are a sugar burner, not a fat burner, and you got yourself in trouble. But here's how this works, because it's all science, right?
Mm-hmm.
And biochemistry, which who would have ever thought that I would say I love biochemistry, but like 20 years ago I would have said, no way, you're nuts. But biochemistry really unlocks the door to all this, because our bodies are not bank accounts. This is not a simple thing of calories in, calories out. Our bodies are chemistry labs, and food is really critical information. We want to make sure that what we eat is telling our body to burn off stored fat and hold on to or build muscle and have stable blood sugar so we have great energy.
Mm-hmm.
When you eat correctly, and I have a plate, I tell people to live by my plate, which is good amounts of clean, lean protein, because you are what you eat, loads of non-starchy vegetables, ideal amounts of healthy fats, and a small amount of a slow, low, low-glycemic, high-fiber carb. When you eat that way, your blood sugar stays balanced. You don't get a big surge of blood sugar and insulin, and you have balanced hormones so that your body can access stored fat for fuel. If you're having to eat every couple hours, it's probably because you're eating a higher carbohydrate push when you do. And when you eat carbs, remember, when you're eating, naturally your blood sugar is going to come up. It's one of those things that happens. And if your blood sugar is coming up, your insulin in turn must come up, because your body tightly regulates your blood sugar, wants to. If it doesn't, you're pre-diabetic or diabetic, because high blood sugar makes your sugar stick, your blood sticky, and creates
mm-hmm.
inflammation. So when you eat, you raise blood sugar and raise insulin. If insulin's up, the message to your body is, hey, we don't need to burn off stored fat. We got some food coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're eating every couple hours like that, you're shutting off fat burning, and you're teaching your body to fuel on sugar. And you want to teach your body to access stored fat for fuel. That's where you have this just great, steady, sustained energy. So I find that when people do eat correctly, for most women that's going to be somewhere, depending on their size, 4 to 6 ounces of clean, lean protein. If you're bigger, more athletic, it'll be more. I'm more in the 8-ounce range. And then usually only one serving of high-fiber carb, maybe a half a cup of lentils, a load of non-starchy vegetables, and 2 or 3 servings of a healthy fat, some avocado or olive oil or coconut milk. You know,
mm-hmm.
when you do that, you should be able to go 4 to 6 hours before you need to eat again. If you need to eat before then, you might either have high fasting blood sugar because you've burned out your adrenals due to stress, or your insulin resistance due to living on those carbs, or you didn't hit a hormonal winter when you ate. You didn't live by the plate. And I find with most people, if they've damaged their adrenals or their insulin, their pancreas, their insulin receptors more likely, we can heal this in a matter of weeks. And you just start to stretch it out. You know, if they have to have a snack, we start with that. We really start, and by the way, the research is really cool, clear that when you eat a substantial breakfast, 400 to 600 calories, you lose more weight and keep it off than those who eat the skimpy breakfasts.
And that's what I find personally. I mean, I've always been a bigger breakfast eater, and I've always, you know, even intuitively, I thought, why am I eating a big dinner? Because I'm going to go out and do what? You know, I'm really just sitting down for the rest of the night. I don't need to do the same amount of work or mentally or physically.
Exactly. So really breakfast, you know, breakfast and lunch are your bigger meals. Dinner is more like a snack. I mean, when I go out, if I go out to eat, we usually will split an entree.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do. I mean,
my
favorite
too.
Thing to do is just get clean, get some wild fish, have some vegetables, and we leave it at that. Because you don't go, you don't need a whole bunch of stuff at night.
What's interesting what you're saying, too, so you're saying if someone is eating based on that plate that you were just mentioning, if you are still hungry within 2 to 3 hours, there are other things going on. Your adrenals might be shot, and you really have to ask yourself, am I in a stressful state? You know, is this something that's going on all the time? This isn't just the fact that I'm hungry.
Right. And you know what? I'll tell you another thing. I mean, we know, and I'll tell you, I look at a lot of lab tests. People who are stressed have higher fasting blood sugar. That's going to shut down fat burning. You will be hungrier. Also, we know that people who are stressed have lower serotonin, lower dopamine. Serotonin is your feel-good neurotransmitter that makes you not crave sugar. If you have low serotonin, you're going to want carbs and sugar because it helps bring tryptophan into the brain. It helps raise serotonin into the brain. If you have low dopamine, you'll have less drive, less sex drive, and you'll want more food because dopamine mm-hmm. helps with appetite. So, I mean, that's why, again, I'm going to go back to our body's not a bank account. It's a chemistry lab. You can see how all of these things come into play, and it's really important because then you start to look at information so differently. Hey, I ate a healthy, good breakfast, and I was hungry 2 hours later. Why? If your breakfast was really good, is it your adrenals? Is it insulin? What's going on? Or is it an inappropriate cue? Are you hungry because you see food sitting out?
Mm-hmm.
Are you hungry because you're really thirsty and we don't have good cues for thirst? Because we found a study in University of Chicago at Illinois found that people who drank a glass of water before bed, 8 ounces, 100% shut down their evening hunger pangs. 100%. You never hear that.
100%?
100%.
Really?
I mean, what study do you ever, you know, hear that? So, you know, if you have your breakfast, I teach people not to drink water during their meals, limit it to 8 ounces total of fluid during the meals. But to make sure that you're drinking a lot of pure spring water and green tea in between your meals, because a lot of times we're not really hungry, we're just thirsty.
Yeah, and I usually do grab green tea. I have to tell you that we ask a lot of different questions on Peer Trainer, which everyone knows, and I started asking about what do you think is your typical healthy breakfast? And someone wrote, well, the best thing is oatmeal and some raspberries and a tall latte. And I just want to comment on how that's very different from what you're saying is on the plate that you're recommending.
Well, let's break it down. Oatmeal, all carbs.
Yes.
Now, depending on the oatmeal, it can be great or terrible because a lot of this oatmeal is just like a candy bar. You know, they have a ton of sugar in them. But let's say that's real long
steel cut
oatmeal. Steel cut.
Mm-hmm.
You made sure that it's gluten-free, processed in a gluten-free facility. There's your source of high-fiber, slow-release, low-glycemic carbs. You have a basically one serving of oatmeal. But now you put raspberries, which are another high-fiber, low-glycemic carb. Then you had a latte with milk, which is another carbohydrate that actually can trigger insulin resistance. You have basically no protein. You have no healthy fats unless you had the whole milk, which it's not really, it's more of a pro-inflammatory fat. So you're missing, by the way, we can't live without protein or fat or water. We can live without carbohydrates. We'll just be bitchy. Did I say that? Cranky.
So vegetables are carbohydrates. So is that true? We can live without them?
Non-starchy, you can live without them. You just won't have as good of bowel movements, right? You can live without them. You cannot live without fat and protein. So when you look at breakfast, you must have your fat and protein there. I think the very best way to start the day is to start the day with a smoothie. Now, not an adult milkshake, but one at home, a high-quality protein powder. I use only professional brands there. I use so delicious unsweetened coconut milk. Mm-hmm. I will put in some wild blueberries or wild raspberries. If anyone has access to Trader Joe's, they got the cheapest deal on those. And then I will throw in usually some extra fiber. I'm really into chia seeds right now, but I'll do some freshly ground flaxseed meal or chia seed. I also use this product from, I don't know what the name of the company, but the product is called Sun Fiber, which mm-hmm. is amazing. If someone reacts to fiber and they get gas or bloating or diarrhea or constipation, it's a regulating fiber. It's been used in the hospital world for a couple decades. So coconut milk, a couple scoops of protein powder, so you have 20 to 30 grams of protein, coconut milk, chia seeds or freshly ground flaxseed meal, and your berries, you're good to go. And that's, I mean, you get a good 400-calorie breakfast that's got a lot of nutrition in it, and you're good for hours. I had one this morning, and it's been, let's see, I don't even know what time it is. Anyway, it's been, what day is it? I'm not sure. It's been 4.5 hours, and I'm fine. I'm good to go. I'm rolling. So, you know, I'll have my next meal here in another hour or two. But, you know, that's, I'm not sitting here starving to death because I had a really good high-quality breakfast. So, again, that's, to me, I see people messing their breakfast up. And, Jackie, breakfast sets the metabolic tone for the day. This is really is your most important meal, not for why people think, but because you want the message to your body when you get up in the morning and start rolling, because you should eat within an hour of waking up. That message to your body should be, hey, I want to have great sustained energy, a good mood, and I want to be burning fat and holding on to or building muscle. Right?
Yeah, and how can the dessert for breakfast really set you up for any productive things during the day? I mean,
it's,
I know we were
talking set you up for more dessert.
Yeah, I mean, I know we were talking about that, and you know, I've always heard, you know, the muffin, it's really a cupcake.
Yeah, it's
half
an
the
adult
time.
Cupcake. Look at it. It's got a cupcake wrapper.
Yeah,
it is
exactly.
A cupcake. I mean, come on. You know, I think I told you this. I was doing a segment on TV about breakfast, and I brought in, I can never name names because I'll get sued, but
yeah, right,
I brought
exactly.
in a muffin from Starbucks, and it was mm-hmm. one of the ones that was keyed in as like the healthy morning muffin, right?
Yeah, or has that
fiber,
word in it. Right.
Yeah, I think it was apple, walnut, fiber, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, I looked it up online. Now it's great because they have the calories everywhere, but it had the same calories and the same fat grams and the same sugar as two Hostess cupcakes.
Oh, my God.
Two Hostess cupcakes. And I'm thinking, no self-respecting woman's going to walk in and get two Hostess cupcakes for breakfast. We would never do that.
Yeah.
But that's, in fact, what we're doing.
And aren't you setting yourself up for the sugar crash? I mean, you
absolutely.
Know, the irritability. It's not just about the weight and feeling good. It's also about what happens to your mood.
Yeah, what happens in 2 to 3 hours when that wears off, when that buzz wears off and you have to go get something else. So then you go and get one of those supposedly good for your gut yogurts with all the sugar in it. It's either got sugar or artificial sweeteners. Either one is a nightmare because the artificial sweeteners actually disrupt your good, healthy gut flora and can make you now store more fat from the calories you eat. And the sugar, of course, feeds the bad gut bacteria and raises insulin. So
you know, that,
either
that
one's
leads
not
us,
good.
This is such an important thing you just brought up, and I'm going to do that as myth number two. Everyone is asking, well, should I replace my sugar with Splenda or Stevia or agave? I have to have you dig into that as the next one.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so you said Splenda. Well, let's talk artificial sweeteners first.
Exactly.
And then we'll nail agave to the wall.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this because people, it's so in vogue right now to go everywhere and say, oh, well, it's not sugar, it's agave, or it's something that's better for me.
Well, first of all, sugar is sugar. Everything that, I mean, they're all the same. They're processed by your body the same. But not really, and here's the difference. And then I'll go back to artificial sweeteners. You have different types of sugars, and they generally will be kind of packaged a couple together. You have fructose, you have glucose, you have sucrose, you have lactose. Now, and there's a whole lot of different names. There's one type of sugar, fructose, and it is the sugar most often found in fruit, but it's not the only sugar in fruit. It is in things. I love emergency. I use emergency packets, but it's like getting a couple bites of an apple. You have to be careful with fructose. Sugar, generally, your body gets into your body, gets into your bloodstream, raises insulin, but sugar is different because it actually goes to the liver and it starts to perturb. The liver doesn't have to do a special type of handling with fructose, different than the other sugars, that causes more of an insulin response. So we know with fructose versus any other sugar, when they want to give lab rats hypertension, that's what they use, that it causes more insulin resistance, that it's way worse for someone who has a tendency to be pre-diabetic or diabetic. And honestly, I think that's everybody. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's interesting. So you don't think it's really half the or percentage of the population that's genetically predisposed? You think
we all have to treat ourselves like we've got cancer and diabetes and heart disease, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you did that, you'd behave differently.
Completely. And I understand exactly what you're saying because everybody just thinks they have an endless supply of health when they're not in front of the doctor.
Well, and how many people
different.
Are actually taking their genetic tests? I've done that. So I know what my genetics are on these things. Most people haven't done that. And what we know now in terms of genomics and what we'll know in a decade are totally different anyway. So still very new science. But agave, it turns out, we all know about high fructose corn syrup. Hey, a lot of the high fructose corn syrup, actually the way it was processed, has mercury in it, not only, you know, with the higher fructose, but also it's from corn, and corn is genetically modified. So, I mean, it's like three strikes, you're out. However,
right.
agave, which looks like it's, you know, this is the challenge, the halo effect of health food stores and Whole Foods and stuff, is you walk in there and you think it's all good.
Mm-hmm, exactly. There's a filter. There is a filter. When you walk in, your defenses go down. You do
Absolutely.
Not analyze and check as deeply as you
and,
would somewhere
and you
else.
You must, because agave is not a health food. Agave is not a health food.
All right,
food.
Tell me more.
It is higher in fructose than high fructose corn syrup.
Oh, my gosh.
You must avoid agave. Agave is horrible. So
I have to
no
ask you
agave.
Something else about it. Somebody said that agave, of course, as the plant, is completely different than the way that it's processed. Does that have something to do with it?
Well, if you were eating agave, the plant, you'd be getting the fiber and the phytonutrients
right.
and all that. You're processing out the sugar part of it.
Yeah, right. And I've heard that there's a chemical part of the process. I mean, I don't know if that's
Think of how they chemically processed high fructose corn syrup, and they actually ended up doing it with getting mercury in it. Look how they process a lot of the soy, and they end up with aluminum in it. You know,
right?
It's not like
what
things
do you think
get
of,
processed and get better.
What do you think of? You know, I personally don't really have to deal with any of this because I just don't have a sweet tooth. It's just not my thing.
I don't
but
either,
so,
but it's genetics, you know.
I didn't know that. Some
so much
people
of
have
sweet tooth. I mean, there are some learned things with sweet tooth, but I look at a lot of genetics, and there is so much to genetics and taste. Taste is really the nutritional gatekeeper. I do not have a sweet tooth. I'm adopted. I was raised. My adopted mother is a massive sweet tooth and a big food pusher, and she's always like, "Have dessert, have dessert." I mean, we always had dessert. We always had candy and cookies and all this stuff around. And I could care less. I mean, if I was going to eat something, like if you said, okay, you get to have a dessert, I either want dark chocolate that's not sweet, or I would like cheesecake that's not sweet. I don't like sweet stuff.
I don't either. And so for people that are listening to us right now going, well, isn't that great for
you
guys?
Exactly. We liked you before. We don't like you now. So, but here's the thing. If you do have a sweet tooth, here's my – and now you'll like me again, okay?
Thank
you know,
God.
Don't fight this. Accept it. Accept that you have a sweet tooth because, again, I do a lot of genetic testing. I see people with sweet tooth. They say, okay, you're going to embrace your sweet tooth. You're going to acknowledge you have it. Now let's figure out better options for you because if you say, I'm not going to eat sweets, wrong. Your evil twin is going to come out and get you some things you should have no business touching. But there are some great things. Cinnamon, vanilla, berries. You know, what I love to do is I like to take these this berry cherry mix from Trader Joe's and heat it up and add in some cinnamon and put on some sliced almonds. If you can eat dairy, I can't handle dairy, unfortunately. Every once in a while I'll have some Greek-style yogurt. You could put some of that in. It's kind of like pie. Sometimes I'll add in some protein powder into that, and it literally, I think it's like pie filling. Very yummy.
Yeah, it's funny you're saying that. Well, my husband has a lot of different allergies, so he takes pumpkin and he puts a little cinnamon and nutmeg on it, and he doesn't put it in pie crust, but that's, you know, his version of pumpkin pie. And
I mean, that's delicious.
You know, I love the advice you just gave, though. I've never heard that before, and I just want to highlight that again. The first thing you said is, the first thing you need to do is, if you have a sweet tooth, if that's where you are genetically, to actually accept that, not to try to fight against, you know, swimming upstream, going, okay, well, I'll just never have that again. Really accepting, this is what I do, this is who I am, now let's figure out all the options that I can that I can use to work with what I will already be predisposed to.
Right, because you know,
I just think that's very interesting, because most I haven't heard that before. Most people are like, you know, you just have to get rid of sugar. You just have to do
it.
Just do it now. And I think that people love to hear that, and they want to think they can do that, but then they just end up beating themselves up, and they end up failing, and then they end up going crazy.
Yeah,
because it's not
like
realistic.
A loser, and I just hate that. You know?
I think that is just, I haven't heard that. You know, the first thing is you just accept it, and then you come up with all the different options. I love that you said vanilla, you know, cinnamon, and just the berry thing, and start to experiment what you can do, because this is who I am, and this is how I work with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
you also understand,
once you know that about yourself, I have this thing called the three-bite rule, where you can have three polite bites of something you really, really, really love. Don't beat yourself up, as long as it's worth it. But I understand some people who have some of the genetic eating disinhibition or increased food desire or big sweet tooth, that could start a really bad ball rolling. So I think it's really important to understand yourself, understand your – we all got something, you know. You're not perfect.
Yeah.
No one's perfect. And if
you
were perfect, no one would want to hang out with you anyway. So I'm glad you're not.
You're boring. You're boring. You're like the doormat. There's
exactly.
No excitement there. So true.
We all have our thing, man. If that's your thing, you can totally have a healthy diet with some of that stuff in there. Just, you know, it's not eating candy bars, right? And I know myself, by the way, I don't have any of the eating disinhibition or anything else, but hey, I'm like anybody else. If I bought a tub of popcorn at the movies, I'd eat a tub of popcorn, so I just don't do it. You know, if I bought some dark chocolate, I'd eat all of it.
If I had a large pizza in front of me, I would eat 3/4 of it. So I don't buy it.
If you know that, you know, I mean, pizza just doesn't do it for me whatsoever. Popcorn, I could eat popcorn until I imploded, you know. So
yeah,
isn't
it almost a good idea to think back when you were younger, some of the foods that you craved, and somehow figure out almost, you know, did this soothe me when I was upset, or did I turn to this for something? Because I've definitely noticed. I remember seeing somebody log. They were on Peer Trainer, and they couldn't understand why they were, you know, craving this old chicken noodle soup they hadn't had in so long, and they realized it was an anniversary of, you know, somebody they were close to.
Mm-hmm.
I always think, you know, when you're talking about popcorn and you're talking about this stuff, I always go back to say, okay, you know, is this real? You know, can I just have, like you just said, your three-bite rule? Because it's exactly what you just said. There's no way that I can just do three bites. I'm going to eat the whole thing, and I know that about myself.
Right. And so you must, and that's where, honestly, I think one of the very best things that we can do is keep a food journal. When you keep a food journal, it just gives you everything you need to know. You know?
Yeah, it's interesting, because we have logs on Peer Trainer, and some people just can't bring themselves to do it. And what I try to say is just commit to 7 days, because you start to see your patterns and you start to see your habits and you start to see what trips you up. I mean, when you have it right in front of you, you can't escape the fact that I can't believe I just did that yesterday.
Exactly. And I will tell you that I don't see private clients anymore. But when I did, if they wouldn't keep a food journal, they were fired.
Oh, that's so interesting, really. Because you had to be able to see what they were – they had to see what they were doing, and you had to see it.
It's for both of us, but it's an accountability factor that changes everything. So, you know, that is – if it's a non-negotiable. I will share with you that when I was on Dr. Phil, they weren't getting the results they were supposed to the first month. I got called in. They were like, ah! And I got on the phone with Phil, and he's like, what do we do? I go, we have to have a journal. He goes, I remember this so well because I'm thinking, oh, no. I go, we have to have him journal. That's, I mean, we're not having him journal. You have to have him journal. So he goes, okay, you go, girl. You take that on.
Oh, I love it. Like, yeah, that's you.
Uh-oh.
I'm not doing that.
I was like, oh, no, because at one point I was monitoring all of Phil's family. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, I had 40 people at one point. I was monitoring their food journals. I'm like, how did I get out of
Yeah,
I like,
know.
What do I have stuck around my forehead? But, you know, that's what really turned them around.
You know, I have to have you comment on the Biggest Loser style show versus what you were doing. I mean, you know, in terms of the Biggest Loser, what happens in our community is people see those kinds of results and they start to beat themselves up because they for some reason it's all relative in their head. They say, okay, well, I know I don't have a personal trainer. I know I don't have all those resources, but they lost 20 pounds. And in their head they say, well, they had all that stuff and I don't, but I could still probably lose 10 pounds if I did some of that stuff. I'd love you to sort of comment on when we start to trick ourselves in our head about relatively what we could do, you know, based on what we've seen other people do.
Yeah, I think the thing that upsets me the most with The Biggest Loser is the message going out is so wrong. And, you know, I mean, we all love the inspiration and the hope. I actually got hired to do their teen show, and I passed on it. But they don't have a grasp on the science. And I remember hearing Jillian say, kind of yelling at somebody, you know, which is always works so well. I respond great when people yell at me.
I just can't wait to do that again.
I know. It's like, please, let's spend more time together. Yelling at them because they'd hit a plateau, right? And I'm thinking, well, of course they hit a plateau. You're destroying their adrenals, right? So,
right.
You know, so they hit, when I remember someone hit a plateau on Dr. Phil, and so we went and we did adrenal testing on him, and I told him, listen, you have to stop exercising so much and you have to eat a little bit more. You're not going to lose weight. He did. He goes, that was such a leap of faith because it was a contest, right?
Uh-huh.
It was such a leap of faith, JJ, but every time I've ever tried to lose weight, this is a guy that actually won, Jim Toth. He goes, every time I'd start to lose weight, I'd get stuck at this point and I'd give up. And this time I got to that point, you looked at my adrenal status, you told me I had to start eating more, exercising less. We shifted him into more interval style training. He went through the plateau and went on to be the winner. And so when I look at that show, what bothers me is I think that it's actually doing more harm than good. Because when people watch that, they think that in order for them to be successful at weight loss, they have to exercise at endurance exercise for hours a day and starve themselves. And that is not the case, thankfully. It's not the case. We know that when you eat a bit, that calories do count, but where they come from counts so much more. And that when you're eating a balanced diet and really bringing up the non-starchy vegetables, first of all, you're going to be fuller anyway because the protein and fat and fiber work together to have a hormonal response that brings your appetite down.
Mm-hmm.
Which there's a long explanation towards, but I'll just leave it at that for now. But also when you do the right type of exercise, which is not long endurance training, which can, in fact, raise stress hormones, break down muscle, lower immune system, increase the aging process, and make you fat over time. But when you do high-intensity interval training, you get a lot more bang for your exercise buck. But hormonally, the message to your body is to handle stress better, to build more muscle, and to stimulate fat-burning enzymes. We actually know in the research that when you do endurance-style training where you're working at a longer pace, lower level, where you're using more fat preferentially as fuel during the exercise, that you actually are better at storing carbohydrates, storing fat back after the exercise, that the fuel that you use during exercise is the fuel that you store back after exercise. So if you want to burn more fat, go more higher intensity with recoveries. You'll burn more sugar, but you'll store that in your muscles afterwards and burn more fat all day long. And the studies...
Can you give me an example of what that would look like? Let's say somebody's doing a 15 or 20 minute treadmill workout.
And by the way, you can give them all my 4x4 workout if you want.
Oh, that would be excellent. And also, I have to go back. I don't want to forget, because I'm sure everybody has this question too, is I know that if somebody goes to a professional, they can get their adrenals evaluated, or if you're on the Dr. Phil Ultimate Weight Loss Challenge, you can. Is there any self-prescription that people can do to understand that they're burning out their adrenals?
I have a great quiz, and we can put this up. Is your stress making you – actually, I wanted to title it. I wonder if it's titled this way now, because it should be, is your stress making you fat, old before your time, and lose your sex drive?
Because that's what
everybody
wants to take that.
Zap
yeah.
your energy, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, you can grab that quiz from my office and put it up, and then everyone can take that, because it helps you identify things that you may not even realize you're doing, like not getting enough sleep, going too long without eating, especially in the morning, things that you may not even realize you're doing that are really hurting your adrenals. So in the absence of taking actually an adrenal stress test, which are very inexpensive, can be done at home. There are spit tests you do 4 times a day. But in the absence of that, this quiz can help you self-identify. So we'll have the quiz available. And as far as high-intensity interval training goes, it's really something that you do all out for 30 to 60 seconds, and then you actively recover, because when you go all out, you're creating lactic acid, which you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
When you actively recover, let's say you go walking right afterwards, you use some of that lactic acid as fuel, so you help recycle it, and then you do this again. And you do this repeatedly to accumulate 4 to 8 total minutes of the high hard part, which you can't do by monitoring heart rate. It's really perceived exertion. You should feel like, I cannot do another second.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling that we haven't felt since we were like kids on a playground chasing the boy or being chased by the boy. I was always chasing him. So, you know, it's been a long time for most of us since that time. And, you know, so an example of this would be, let's say that you normally get on a treadmill or get on an elliptical and you start going, you know, just at a moderate pace. You're going to go all out for 30 seconds, then go easy for a minute. All out,
mm-hmm.
easy, all out, easy. You'll find that this translates into every area of your life. You're picking up things easier because you're raising growth hormone. Lactic acid triggers the release of something called growth hormone. This is that hormone of youth. It helps us burn fat. It helps us de-age, and I believe we can de-age. Forget anti-aging.
I like that. De-age.
Die.
Exactly.
We want to de-age, right?
Yes, I love that. Yes.
So,
now, that's very interesting. So basically, it's a 2-to-1 ratio in your workout, regardless
right.
of how long you're doing
right.
it for.
Right, and it's 30 to 60 seconds is the little interval burst.
Okay, so 30 seconds all out as fast as you, and it doesn't even matter. You know, many times people say, which is better, the treadmill or the elliptical? I think what you're saying is it doesn't matter what you're doing. It's the ratio.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, if you're playing and that's what's so interesting about inherently in a lot of sports, you know, in tennis, it is like,
right.
in tennis, you're going all out for, you know, the ball or, you know, whatever, or however long your rally or, well, of course, unless you're a professional, but then you have the recovery period where people are waiting and you have the serve time and all that. So it's kind of interesting that that's inherent in a lot of sports.
Right. Most of the sports are stop and go. So,
because when I was just thinking about soccer. I was really thinking about most sports that you'll even do at this age, because I have found that people, when they find a sport that they like again, they'll go back and they'll start working out. They'll rearrange babysitting. They'll do anything to, you know, get back to that sport that they like.
This
so it's so good
important.
To know that – I'm sorry,
yeah.
go ahead.
Well, you know, it's funny. They find that kids – you know, kids who find a sport when they're young tend to be healthy and fit their whole life. That's why it's so awful what they're doing with PE. You know?
It makes so much sense, because when I sit back and think, oh, I have to go, you know, work out, personally, when I think that, I have to go to the treadmill versus, oh, I get to go play a tennis game, that's a night and day feeling for me. Like, I really will arrange anything to be able to get to a tennis match versus, oh, great, I'm going to the treadmill today, you know.
Well, now you know that you should be doing the tennis is the better thing, and probably the better thing for a lot of stuff, because it's going to be better for your adrenals, too. It's more fun. You'll be happy.
Yeah. What I love the most about what you're saying is the integrate. You know, you always hear the word integrative. And forget even that word. It's that it all works together. It's all connected. And when you're talking about the, you know, taxing your adrenals because you can be doing that with exercising, I mean, you can be doing that at work too. Somebody, you know, your boss wants a project done by a specific time. You're going to be taxing your adrenals just as much as you are being, you know, shouted at while you're working out. I mean, you know what
right.
I mean?
Yes.
I mean, people talk about it. They say, you know, after I have a huge project at work, I want a large pizza. I want a cheeseburger. I want
yeah.
a large Coke.
Exactly. They're self-medicating. They're getting their serotonin back up.
It's just the thing that I wanted to just go back to, because our next myth was you need to do endurance cardio for weight loss. And you were just saying, I have to ask you, so now that I know the ratio, how long does someone, and is this an individual thing, have to be doing that cardio to maintain a really high level of health?
Let's move it back to actually what I think is just a global exercise prescription. Now, I will tell you that I shift this based on someone's genetics because, and it was very interesting, the New York Times just actually talked through some of the studies on exercise and genes and why some people work out and get no results and some people work out just a little and they're like amazing. And there's a lot of genetics involved in which, depending on your genes, how much exercise you really need.
Mm-hmm.
But without knowing that, there's some foundational things I think everybody needs. One of the things that people need to do, and our society is doing everything to not have this happen when you look at it, is we need to move more.
Mm-hmm.
We should really be moving for about an hour a day. That's
mm-hmm.
not exercise. Walking. Like right now I'm wandering. I always, when I'm doing any type of a call, I stick a headset on, I wander around. They show that thin people fidget more. But, I mean, just walking the dog, having a walking date rather than a, you know, a
dinner
coffee
date.
Or lunch date. Right.
Yes.
Just walking to places. My boyfriend moved to Chicago from La Jolla, which, as you can imagine, we were both like, you know.
I know.
But, you know, we're like, okay, we're going to make the best of it. It's only for a couple years. We're counting months. But the nice thing is we walk everywhere. You know, I mean, hey, I'm in
Southern California.
When
you're in Chicago, because you're in the city,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
yes.
We don't walk in L.A. Like
yes.
The other day I parked at the grocery store. We were going one place into another, and I kind of said, should we move the car? He's looking at me like, honey,
yeah.
you know, but we really do need to move more. And the easiest way to get you to do that is to throw a pedometer on. Great study showed that when kids added a pedometer, they weren't instructed to do anything, just put a pedometer on. They watched an hour less of TV a day. So the first thing I tell
wow.
people to do, yes, I mean, it's huge. And I find that when I have a pedometer on, I absolutely do. I become obsessive about, like, how many steps am I getting? So the first thing you want to do is move more. Now, pedometer works great. I have a really pretty little princess dog, so that helps me too, my little baby.
Oh, so cute.
Well, I don't have girls. I have boys, so I have a little girl dog who lets me put her in dresses. So, and people who know me are like, you were the last person on Earth we thought would have, like, a dog in a dress, you know?
What I love about what you're saying, too, is just the general movement more, because people, especially I hear this all the time in the community, they say they start to beat themselves up because they don't have the hour that they perceive that they have to work out at the gym. And, you know, they have their whole routine, and because they have their whole routine, if they don't have that time, they don't go do it at all. And you're sort
right.
of just bringing, obviously, this awareness about just general movement.
Hey, you know what? This great study was looking at movement, and what they found was people were told either to work out 30 minutes a day or 3 times 10. And the people who worked out, who were given the 30-minute-a-day prescription versus the people who were giving 10 minutes 3 times a day, the 3 times a day people did way better in terms of heart health, weight loss, because they may not make all 3, but they did something. Whereas these
right.
30 minutes either did it or didn't do it, right?
Wow.
So, and when you're looking at intensity, we're really focusing, and then we'll move into the next part of exercise now, because moving more is not exercise. It's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to brush our teeth. We're supposed to floss. I'm really trying to floss, I swear. This is,
I floss every day.
Oh, I'm doing much better with it. So we brush our teeth, we floss. I mean, these are things we're supposed to. We take our vitamins. I'm really good about that. But,
yeah.
And we move but more. We walk. Thing. We get an hour worth of movement in throughout the day, and everything counts. That's not exercise. Exercise, you have to be hot, sweaty, and it should hurt a little bit. It shouldn't be like obscene, but it should hurt a little bit, right? Because you have lactic acid building up. And so the bare minimum is high-intensity interval training, like, you know, sprint, walk, get on a bike, stand up and push hard, and then sit down and pedal easily, get in a pool, swim hard, and then you know, walk around the pool. Whatever it is, three times a week, accumulate at least 4 minutes of total bursting. Mm-hmm. And I've had people do that where they just started at work. Like, whenever I stay at a hotel, the stairs are my bursting. But it may just be something that you do throughout the day at work.
And you're saying 4 minutes of bursting throughout
then,
your day. How many times a day?
You can either do it throughout the day if you need to uh-huh. accumulate your time. If you're going to
yeah.
try to tell me you don't have time, don't use that excuse. Make time. You need to. But
and it really is just an excuse because, let me tell you, the second you have time, it'll be something else. Well, I don't have
yeah,
money.
It's totally an excuse.
Well, I don't have – and when you start to even feel yourself saying that, it's so good to notice that, oh, what am I going to make up next time?
Yeah, it's a total excuse, no question. It's an excuse. So
I think the biggest thing. Wait, so the 4 minute spurts. How many times do I have to do that during a day, like in my?
So you
want to
get four
mentality.
Total minutes. So that would be 30 seconds all out, a minute recovery. 30 seconds all out, a minute recovery. Right.
You oh, okay. For a total 4 minutes of the bursting. Okay.
Right.
Oh,
it takes
wow.
about 15-20 minutes. If you're
well, who,
if you're fitter,
who can't
you can
do,
do
that?
It for eight. Right. And if you seriously think I can't do that, then what you can do is. You can do just that minute burst throughout the day, like take the stairs. I have people get this unit called an exciser,
uh-huh.
and the exciser is incredible because you can take it to work. You can burst on it for 30 to 60 seconds, and then you
uh-huh.
can go back to work and then do it again because you're not going to get sweaty. So
uh-huh.
that's the worst-case scenario, and you can find that if you go to YouTube and put in JJ Virgin Burst Training. You'll see me doing it. You'll see me doing it.
Oh, that's
it.
Great. And we'll also provide the link to that because I think that's also good. You know, some people are still working, you know, 80, 90 hours a week and, you know, they're very committed and they're sitting there listening to this going, okay, I know you just said who couldn't do that, but I can't. So,
right.
you know, please help me.
So, and then the final, the final thing besides that is to do some kind of resistance training. And I've divided the body into four parts, upper body pushing, things like a push-up, upper body pulling, like a pull-up, hips
mm-hmm.
and thighs, that's things like a step-up or a squat, and power core, and those are bigger movement sit-up types of things. And what I teach people to do is to hit each body part at least twice a week. And I want people to work as an unstable environment as possible, more free weights and cables and body weight, big movements, multi-joint, no little silly, you know, calf raises. Let's do big stuff. And when you do big stuff, you do the heaviest weight you can handle in good form for 8 to 12 repetitions, multiple sets with 60-second rest breaks. When you do this, it is going to help you hold on or build muscle because as we age, our weight may not be shifting that much, but what our weight is made up of, which is all that matters. Our weight is not what matters. What our weight is made up of is the important factor. If
mm-hmm.
you are at the ideal weight for your height and bone and frame and you've got too much body fat, you are not healthy. That's why not only do we have to look at your body fat, we also have to look at where that body fat is. Where is it more truncal, more visceral, more trunk, right? Gut,
mm-hmm.
belly fat, or is
yep.
it evenly distributed? And you have to watch as you're losing where it's coming off of because if you're losing fat on your arms and legs and not off your trunk, you're getting worse, not better. If you're losing weight and not losing fat, you're getting worse, not better. And something's wrong and you got to figure it out. Something's wrong with that chemistry lab. So resistance.
Oh, wait, I just
want to
repeat
you.
That because it's very interesting. You know, many times people just hear about the belly area. They say, okay, well, if you're losing fat off the belly area, that's covering your organs, and that's the most important thing. But what I just heard you say was if you're losing fat off of your arms and legs but not anywhere else, then that's a problem, which kind of supports that. But I think people are so concerned with that jiggly arm fat that they get very excited when they're just losing weight off their arms or fat off
their
arms.
Yeah, and I understand. I'm all over great arms. You know that.
Yeah, right. No, absolutely. But it's interesting what you just said.
Yeah, you have to monitor your belly, which, hey, the simplest way to do that, I love, Tanita actually has a body fat scale that does segmental. I used to carry my $5,000 professional one around, but they have one for a couple $100 at home. However, you can also use, you know, I do believe we should be weighing and body fat testing every single week. It's easy to let things get out of control if you don't.
I watch people do that. And they think, you know, it's you start to live in an alternate reality, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
especially if you're wearing your yoga pants every day. It's really easy for things to go south. You know?
Completely. You know, I have to tell you, I have, you know, I wanted to move on to, you know, so many of these myths of, you know, do you need calcium for bone health, whole grains or health food? You know, skim milk is good for you, but I think we're going to have to go to another series.
I was gonna say, because, how many hours do we have?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, which is great. You know, this will be the first one in our series, and I'm looking at all these myths we were exchanging and going back and forth about, and, you know, just even just giving somebody a doable workout, a 4-minute burst of that with that 1-to-2, with that 2-to-1 ratio. I mean, right there, I think that people suddenly are like, wait, you just told me I don't have to go for that hour, you know, cardio thing that's been taking me away from everything else I want to do. I think, you know, just right there, just that, these small actionable things you can do and, you know, change these, you know, the myth busters that we're talking about, I think, when you commit to doing one of these things and you start to make those little changes, it really results into the big win that I think everyone is looking for.
Well, and that's the most important thing that you just said that I really want people to get, because I think we tend to think that, like, this, we need to do this 180-degree change, and that's not how we change. We change in small degrees. The small degrees, when they add up, make a massive impact. But if all you do from listening today is say, hey, I'm going to start burst training, or,
yeah,
hey, I'm going to start eating I'll start doing a shake for breakfast.
Yeah, with that, which was interesting what you were just saying, right, with that makeup of that plate, you know, you're really thinking about those non-starchy vegetables, you're thinking about that lean protein, and you're thinking about that good fat. You know, I have to say that, and of course this is going to be a myth, we have, by the way, JJ, we have to talk about this next time, is that good fat. You know, I hear people say, you talk about coconut milk, my cardiologist says coconut milk is bad. We have to talk about this next time. Because
it's so
people hear this so much and they're having so much trouble knowing what to do. Okay, great. So JJ, it's great to have you here with us, and we'll move on to the next series, and we'll start right off with those, you know, why coconut milk is okay.
Fun. Yeah, one of my favorite foods. All right.
All right.
Cool.
Sounds good. Talk to you later.
Thank you. Bye.